This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off-limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Queer identity, love, sex, gender, family, transitions, politics, long-term marriage, it is all in this book and more. I'm talking about the memoir, Queerly Beloved, A Love Story Across Genders. And the co-authors of that book, the married couple who wrote it, Jacob and Diane Anderson Minchell, are my guests tonight. Plus, we're live. So give us a call at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. Remember, if you call and get on the air, you win a prize from Sportsheets. It's that simple. And today, it was announced in the trade media that Sportsheets is coming out with the very first ever plus-size sex toy line. So it's things like harnesses and all these different like bondage things for plus-size people. So that's really exciting. They're breaking some new ground there. And don't you want to get in on that action? I know you do. Call us, 866-472-5788. Let me tell you about today's guests. Diane and Jacob Anderson Minchell are co-conspirators in Life and Love. They co-author the Blind Eye Mystery series, and Queerly Beloved is the true story of how the once lesbian couple survived a gender transition. Their 23-year relationship has been the subject of numerous articles, including in the New York Times, and radio programs like NPR's StoryCorps. Diane is editor-at-large of The Advocate magazine, editor-in-chief of HIV Plus magazine, and contributing editor to SheWired, OutTraveler, and Gay.net. She penned the erotic thriller Punishment with Kisses, and her writing has appeared in dozens of publications and anthologies. The couple co-founded Girlfriends magazine, and Diane also launched Alice magazine and previously served as the longtime editor-in-chief of Curve. She has won numerous journalism awards, including a 2013 National Lesbian and Gay Journalism Association Award. And in 2014, Diane will serve as a delegate to the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. Jacob sits on the board of the Lambda Literary Foundation. He has written for numerous LGBT and feminist publications, and for 4 years, he penned the nationally syndicated weekly column Trans Nation. He later produced and co-hosted the radio show Gender Blender. His work is included in anthologies like Men Speak Out, Views on Gender, Sex, and Power, and the award-winning Portland Queer. In addition to his journalistic efforts, Jacob is also a mixed media artist and is at work on his first graphic novel. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Diane and Jacob.
Thank you.
Oh, in unison, they've been practicing that all night. So let me first say that this memoir is fantastic. It's incredibly well written. It's thoughtful. It's intriguing. But most of all, it really is the definition of laying yourself bare on the page. I mean, There are moments in this book that are so raw, so honest, and come across as so real. That there were times that I found myself going, "Oh God, oh wow. Did they talk before they were going to put that in?" And so to me, there is no stone left unturned. I mean, it is just really covers a lot of ground, and there were just so many revelations in the book, and I don't want to give them all away. So I'm going to try to, you know, like skirt around them. But in writing the book together, did you set some kind of parameters, or did you say, we're going all out?
You know, it's a good question, actually. What we did was what we decided we were going to do, we're each going to write our sections individually so that we weren't influenced by what the other person was writing in this particular case. It's the first time we've written like that. Normally, when we write a manuscript, we start at the beginning, and whoever has the manuscript at any given time just adds to it and takes it wherever they want, and the next person catches up and does the same. But this, we really wanted to write our own individual pieces, tackling these different issues and these different territories from our own perspective without looking at what the other person had written initially. And then we would look at what the other person had written, and that was our time to sort of have that written conversation afterwards that kind of would go back and forth, what kind of feels like a conversation in the book. So we did say there were very few things that we didn't know already about each other in some way. And this sort of deepened the conversation, but there were a couple of things. And I know I've got something in there that's a little bit shocking. And so I did say, hey, I'm going to reveal something. I've decided to reveal something. Do you want me to tell you ahead of time, or do you want to just read it in the book when you get the manuscript? And Jake said, I'll just read it when I get the manuscript. And that way he could process it in his own time and that kind of thing. So, well, we didn't set any parameters. In fact, we did have to set some parameters with our editor in terms of what we were willing to reveal. And we set very few parameters. Basically, the only ones that I really, we minimized our, certain family members at their wishes. And then, but very few. And because this isn't their story, this is our story. And then we made the decision not to talk about what surgeries Jake has or hasn't had. And he's got a great explanation as for why we did that. Do you want to tell her?
Let's see if she's ready.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
All right. So this is Jacob. And the reason that, you know, we don't talk about my surgery so much is we, in the trans community, there are people who have surgery and there are people who don't. And unfortunately, there is a little bit of a hierarchy, and people who've had surgery often are valued in a different way. They get to say they're done in this particular way. There's this sort of, you know, stuff around it, and especially from external, so non-trans community members seem to be very fixated on what, you know, surgery we've done, what our genitals look like, and again, whether or not we're done. First of all, that's not necessarily a concept that everybody agrees with, that even there is an idea of done, that we're, you know, all need to do certain things, or that you even want to have certain kind of surgeries, especially bottom surgery. But there's also a lot of privilege in being able to have those surgeries. There's financial privilege. There's for a trans man, the surgery actually just has never really reached the level of skill that it's reached for trans women. So, but what happens is that the people who've had bottom surgery are usually the ones who say that they've had it, and people who haven't had it are the ones who say, I don't want to talk about it. We really felt like from the beginning that regardless of what decision I made, what decision we made together, we would not say one way or another whether I had bottom surgery until everyone has that opportunity that, you know, sort of isn't laden with all this extra baggage.
So basically the burden isn't always on people who don't have access to surgeries.
Right.
You know, it's like we can be very privileged and do what we want perhaps, but there are plenty of people who don't have access to surgeries for whatever reason, don't want to have surgery, and they of saying that you can't be fixated on our genitals. We don't want to talk about that. So that was sort of the reasoning. So we set out that parameter. We set out, we'll definitely talk about top surgery because that was a, that was the initial thing. And there was a fundamental change that happened that day, that moment. And that was a kickoff to a transition in a different way. And we'll talk about that. But beyond that, we're not going to talk about it. But when, and this is actually the thing is partly is this is a question I get all the time. People ask me all the time, you know, well, you know, has he had the full thing? Is he done? Is he the full enchilada, the snip, snip? There's all these different things that they say to find out, you know, what if in their minds, Jake is a real man now. And so I just, you know, I normally would talk about everything, but this is sort of an agreement we made. And so I just generally turn it around and say, you know, I'm not going to talk about that, but we could talk about your wife's vagina, for example, because this is a question straight men ask me a lot. So I'm like, you could talk about your wife's vagina. We could go there, you know.
And I love that comeback. It's so brilliant. It's like if you two wrote a memoir about a major life change, like getting sober, no one in their right mind would say, and what's going on with your genitals now that you're sober?
Right.
Or, you know, or like you converted from Catholicism to Judaism, right? So it's a big change, right? And then someone would sit down and go, so your spiritual life. Okay, I've got it. Now, genitals.
Right.
Yeah. How's that going? I mean, it really put the whole thing in perspective about how kind of absurd and how much it's about like the other person's like fears and anxieties and fantasies and hopes and wishes and not about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so much of, you know, how trans people are dealt with in public is often just all about our genitals. Those are the questions that are raised most often. You know, what do your genitals look like? What kind of sex do you have? And how do you go to the bathroom? Where do you go to the bathroom? And it's very fixated on, again, on a very, you know, on a body part that A, is should be private, and B, is not who we are. You know, it's not the whole of anybody, I would hope. So.
Now, one of the central things that you guys talk about is that, Diane, you are, for all intents and purposes, a professional lesbian, which means that your job has been, for the past two decades or more, you have been an activist and a writer and a very public lesbian and, mm-hmm. and writing for LGBT publications. I mean, people know you for this. And apparently, when Jacob transitioned and you began to call Jacob your husband, you said very clearly and articulately in the book, I identify as queer. Here's why. I still identify as queer. Here's why. Made perfect sense to me. But there was like some kickback a little bit about that. In one case, people like challenged your qualifications, because at the time you were basically running the nation's largest lesbian magazine, Curve.
Right.
And people were like a little bit up in arms, like, how could you edit this lesbian magazine and represent lesbian communities all over the world when you're not a lesbian anymore?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you see this coming? Because I swear I wanted to just smack a few people after I read about that.
You know, we actually were worried that it was going to be even worse. We initially, when we first knew this was happening, we talked about it and we were like, you know, the main thing was to sort of mitigate its impact on my career. We were both very worried about that. And so we went to both our publishers, my publisher at the magazine and our book publisher. And we honestly said, hey, this is happening. Do we need to stay closeted? Am I going to get fired? You know, like how do you feel about this? And they, my publisher at Kerr, Frances Steven, was very wonderful. She really set the standard for how the folks there treated me at the company. And I think a lot of lesbians in the community, she said, you're the best person to run this magazine. This doesn't change it in any way. Your partner's identity changing doesn't affect anything here. And that was sort of the thing that we ran with after that.
Yeah, which is really what I had felt from the beginning. I was really offended by the ideas that my changes would mean something about Diane's identity, because it's, you know, I'm changing my body and my identity shouldn't have an impact on her in a great way. It's like her identity is her own. You know, it does not dependent on what I do. So why should it be dependent on what I say, who I am, and how I identify?
I should say, however, though, that he gets flack for this still for saying that, you know.
It's that's what I was going to say, is has everyone calmed the fuck down? But apparently not.
No, in fact, he had, I you know, I said I did an op-ed and I got so much, you know, flack from it that Jake did a follow up that said, my wife being a lesbian doesn't make me less of a man. And he got a lot of blowback from that, basically, for a variety of reasons. I mean, there's a lot of trans men also who believe that if I still identify as a lesbian, which at this point, you know, there's a variables to how I identify. But, you know, if I still identify as a lesbian, then that means I don't see Jacob as a man. And he usually, you know, counters that with the sort of ridiculousness of that statement.
Plus, there's just, I mean, again, you know, if you know from reading the book that I have, there's a, you know, number of sections about why I think Diane, you know, treats me as a man, and some of them are, you know, just the silly things that she does sometimes that make me realize that she's, you know, wholly seeing me as a man. Like when she got upset that I hadn't had a prostate exam.
Yes, she was very alarmed at that, because so many men die from prostate cancer because they don't get their prostates examined. And that was totally, I know you don't have a prostate, but I totally got where she was going with it. She was like, oh my God, this is right. Men's health. This is an issue.
That's part of the thing. Like once he started transitioning, I was like completely focused on all these men's health issues and, you know, making, you know, because men die earlier and men have heart disease more and men do all these things. And so I was just like trying to mitigate everything and, you know, and perhaps it's a testament both to how I see him fully as a man and also how I didn't pay attention in biology class, but still.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. One thing I know for sure is that whether you have a prostate or not, you can find an amazing sex toy, fantastic sex education, and great customer service at Good Vibrations. Go to goodvibes.com and use coupon code Tristan for 15% off your order. Coming up, we will continue this talk with the authors of Queerly Beloved. I want to talk about testosterone. I want to talk about parenting. I want to talk about queer identity. I want to talk about being together for 20 years. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. So stay with us. Don't go anywhere.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than 3 decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at 6 retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Sports Sheets is the sex toy company that's been keeping couples connected for over 20 years. Their fantasy restraint and sex toy products redefine sexual adventure. From bondage and sexual positioning to strap-ons and role play, Sports Sheets makes a toy for everyone's taste and budget. So go treat yourself to something from Sports Sheets, available wherever great sex products are sold.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today we are talking with Jacob and Diane Anderson Minchell, and we're live. So you can call us and ask all your burning questions about what it's like to be in a relationship for more than two decades with someone and go through a major life change, that is gender transition. Call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on Twitter, at Sex Out Loud Radio, or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. So, Jacob, one of the things that I found so incredibly startling and amazing about your sections of this book was that I've read a lot of trans men's narratives and memoirs and stories, a lot, probably more, I would say more than the average person, just, you know, because of things. And I found you to be so incredibly self-aware and thoughtful and insightful about how this transition affected you. But not in a superficial way. Like, I've read all the stories of how, like, oh my God, my jaw is squarer. Yes, it's squarer. I'm measuring it now.
Right.
My hips are smaller. Yes, it's I'm looking in the mirror every 15 minutes. They're smaller. Which, not to disparage, I'm probably going to get calls about that now. I'm not calling out anyone in particular. I'm just saying there are, like, these traditional tropes that come up now in trans male narratives. And I always want to go, like, a layer deeper. And so I want to read this piece as an example for the listeners and ask you about it. You talk about testosterone and you say, but it did change me. And one of the most dramatic ways was in dulling my senses. Testosterone really does literally thicken your skin. It makes it rougher and less sensitive. Even my fingertips are less sensitive than they were before. It's like there's now a barrier between the world and me, as though I'm, I copied this wrong. I'm sheathed head to toe in a giant condom. And my thicker skin carries over into the metaphoric, because just as my nerve endings are now protected behind a thicker layer of skin, so too are my emotional nerves. My emotional range has narrowed. The ups and downs have evened out. Feelings flattened and quieted.
Absolutely.
But this is just one of, I feel like I haven't heard, I've heard this before in conversation, but I haven't seen it laid out so explicitly in a book. And it sounds dramatic first. I mean, how do you reconcile how much these hormones really have changed you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge surprise for me because, you know, I'm a big feminist. I really had believed that the differences between men and women were all about, you know, how we are raised, how we treat men and women differently, because we do from birth. And it's incredible how different, you know, we're sort of
socialized
into these two different tracks. But I had no idea just how much the hormones would change me. And that really was sort of the most surprising thing about the experience for me, which is probably why I'm, you know, sort of really attuned to it as well. And the emotional thing for me, you know, it was this trade-off because the external stuff, the thickening of my hands and the inability to sort of feel the world around me, that is a disadvantage, I think. But the internal thing for me was a nice thing. For me, losing some of that emotional roller coaster was a great thing. But I do know that it impacts my ability to relate to Diane in this, you know, very negative way, and makes it so that we don't communicate in the same way. We don't, you know, we can't have heart to hearts in the way that we did before because of this, you know, sort of.
You're just not there.
Yeah. Yeah. There, you know, there's a barrier there. Again, there's something that's just keeping stuff from coming through.
And so how has that affected your emotional relationship, Diane?
Yeah, I think that part of the flattening of, I remember early on, actually, we were on a radio and somebody said, well, Diane, what's different about him? And I had said he's duller, and they thought that was horrific. And I was like, no, I mean, it just is that, he is, his emotions have really flatlined. And so there just aren't a lot of peaks and valleys there. It's pretty even keel and stuff. And, the thing is, as a lesbian couple, we would do all night marathons of lesbian processing. We definitely were talking, everything was talked out in these marathon talking sessions. And that's just not in his wheelhouse anymore. That's something that just changed for him. And so that changed again how we communicated, and we really had to, kind of work out different ways to communicate about that, or to communicate about anything after that, because, we just couldn't do the same kind of thing. And he valleys in terms of his emotional scope now. I can tend to be more exaggerated in my emotions towards, he'll feel like, oh, what is her deal? Why is she crying about this? Whereas, 10 years ago, he would be there crying as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think it's a tricky prospect for it. It feels like one of the most radical changes in your relationship.
Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons Jake is so self-aware of these changes that did happen to him were because I was always around to remind him and pester him about them. So I think that, the thing about the thickening skin is that I think I was the first one to notice that constantly because, again, things do change. And, when you're caught, sometimes you kiss a woman and her, she's very like thin, supple lips and, the different, her hands, the way their hands will touch you, the grazing of your face and stuff. And there's parts of that he just is no longer capable of. He certainly can touch my face, but he can't graze it in the same way because he can't feel it in the same way without extra pressure on it. So it's just, I never understood when people would talk about men being so handsy and so manhandly and stuff. And I think now that's not necessarily a function of their aggressiveness. Certainly it is sometimes, but oftentimes it's because they don't feel the same way tactilely. And so they've got to like touch everything harder, I'll just say, just stroke it and he'll push, I mean, it's just such a basic thing, but it's a basic change that like kind of signifies little things that all add up to be a significant change.
Yeah. And again, I also think that they carry over from the physical to the metaphorical in these ways that are, emotional in very similar ways. And, again, sort of give me a different perspective on male and female relations than I'd ever had before.
Now, another thing I want to talk about is monogamy, because another revelation in this book is that although you have had an agreement from the beginning of your relationship that you can each do what you want, you have largely been monogamous. There's one incident, and I'm just going to call it an incident because I don't want to give away, because it's one of the most dramatic parts of the book, and one of the most honest and brave, I think. So I'm going to just say to people, go read and buy the fucking book. But you've been monogamous for all intents and purposes for 23 years, and you have like some strange ambivalence about that. Why is that?
Yeah, I have the ambivalence. I think that, when we first came into the relationship, I had been in a number of long-term relationships and there was the promise of monogamy, but not the reality of monogamy in any of them. And so my ex-wife and I, remember we had kind of come up with all these different rules for non-monogamy. I think we had like a document that was like 5 pages of rules that we would adhere to. And when she split up and Jake and I got together, I kind of, implemented the same thing. We would have all these rules and we would talk about everything and we'd share, every little thing. If you do anything, you've got to get my permission first and we've got to talk about it. And as the years went by, we sort of both started adapting that to, I don't actually want to hear about it. And you can do what you want, but just make sure it doesn't get back to me. And, you know, so it kept evolving. But at the same time, neither one of us was ever doing anything with anybody else. And I think part of that is, as just cheesy and corny as it sounds, there is nobody I'd rather bang than Jake. And I think that I think he feels the same way, you know. So I think that that is part of the thing that, you know, when you're looking at having sex with somebody else, you know, to me, it's got to be like a reason to have sex with somebody else, that, and why it would be better than having sex with Jake. But I also think that, you know, being monogamous sounds so uncool and so unmodern. And I really wanted to, if I was going to be a wife, I wanted to be very hip and modern and cool and sexy and understanding. And it doesn't sound sexy and stuff when you say you're monogamous. So I worried about saying I was monogamous in the book,
pretty much.
I mean, it was really one of the big things, you know. I was, in fact, afterwards, somebody, you know, had done an interview with us and you know, had any regrets about it. And I was saying I was still kind of embarrassed about putting down that we're monogamous, you know.
Wow. And I mean, considering all that's in the book, and there is just some really deep and tender stuff, that surprises me that that's the scariest thing for you.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I wanted to really, you know, cultivate sort of a sexy persona in the world. And part of having a sexy persona, I think, is sort of like the aura of, you know, availability. And so if I say, nah, I'm really not available, and I really haven't been available for almost a quarter century, you know, it just doesn't sound as sexy to me. So I think that's where I've been, you know. I've wanted to be a Cosmo girl, and somehow along the way I turned into like a good housekeeping wife. So I think that was my
worst. I don't know that that's quite the case, just knowing what I know of you from the book. I don't think they're going to put you on the cover of Good Housekeeping. There are a few issues to contend with before that happens.
Yeah, it's like that time when she was, you know, at one of the events for Curve, and she was like, well, what if, you know, what if I just am not interested in sex anymore? And it's just like, well, that clearly isn't the case. You know, you may not be interested in having sex with someone else, but it's clearly just not the case. So.
And I have, you know, I have gone into situations expecting to have sex with someone else. We had, you know, a part of my thing, I have told Jake from the very beginning, in my 20th high school reunion, I was going to have sex with at least one person from my high school, if not more. So, and I did go to my 20th high school reunion completely ready to have sex with somebody. And they're just, maybe the right people weren't there, or I wasn't feeling it, or what, but I just wasn't feeling it. It just didn't seem worth it.
Yeah, well, I just got to say, my 20th high school reunion was a major letdown. It was just, it defied my expectations in horrible negative ways. So but that's just about me. Okay, so we're going to take another break. And I want you on the break, everyone, to check out WeVibe.com. WeVibe has been a sponsor of this show since the very beginning. They are so good to me, and they're such a great sex positive company, and they make great products. What more do you want? Go to WeVibe.com to check out all their products and stay with us. We still got a lot to talk about, and I promise there'll be more sex. There'll definitely be more sex. Okay. Stay with us.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe, share the pleasure.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at 6 retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We are talking today with Jacob and Diane Anderson Minchell. They are the authors of Queerly Beloved, their new memoir about, well, it's really a love story with a little gender transition thrown in there. You know, just one chapter, really. No, I'm kidding. And you can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Jacob, one of the things that I found the most eloquent and interesting is this thread in the book about how losing your job and losing your job as a park ranger, which is a really masculine, you know, put that in quotation marks, job, and losing it as the result of this accident and becoming disabled really impacted how you saw yourself and kind of really was like a tipping point for shining the light on your own gender identity issues. I wonder if you would talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had been a park ranger and I really loved that job, and it really, you know, it actually became this identity for me for the first time, where girl being a lesbian wasn't my primary identity. And, you know, when I was injured, it not only made me feel weaker, but it was really interesting that the other men that I worked with really responded to me as though I had, you know, somehow been weakened and feminized and I was like contagious, you know, and they didn't want to catch it, you know.
They didn't want to catch femininity from you.
Exactly. They did not want to catch femininity or this idea that their masculinity could be taken away from them in such a way. And so they sort of dropped off, like, communicating with me in this way. But it also really made, you know, there was this focus then by being injured and being hurt. It's very, you know, when you're in pain, you really focus a lot on your body in this particular way. And so this sort of combination of having lost this thing that had provided me with this sort of masculinity and this sort of shell to put myself in that was, you know, a little butcher than I felt like I looked, you know, to lose that at the same time and then be sort of forced to focus on my body. And often in the exact areas where I had a problem, you know, a lot of my pain actually centered around my pelvic area. And, you know, I actually had told a shrink, I said, you know, I maybe it's not surprising, but this pain is all in this area about my, you know, that I don't like about myself. It's, you know, this part of my body I don't like. So I think that those things like sort of built up on each other with all of my, you know, years and years of gender, you know, incongruous. And really, you know, then when I also then read these books and anthologies, really, you know, pushed me through to the other side of realizing that was my story, that I really am trans, not that I was just a lesbian.
And I think another surprising part of this book for me was that it's also to some extent about Diane's gender. And Diane, you yourself have a non-traditional gender. I mean, would you agree with that first? Let me just say that. I don't want to put that on you if you wouldn't agree with that.
No, no, you cut it out. So say that last part one more time. Did you cut out?
Oh, just that you have a non-traditional gender expression.
Yeah,
that comes out in the book. But would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
And how do you think that has affected your ability to kind of go with this major change in your relationship? Because I think by outward appearances, you seem like a femme and a girl or a woman. But then when it breaks down to it, like you have all of these other characteristics that are not traditionally female.
Yeah, I think it's really funny because one of the things is, you know, I am actually, you know, very much, you know, on the outside of femme. I mean, I used to be, you know, definitely sort of rockabilly femme on the outside, but I've always had very male what we call in our culture very male characteristics of how I take space, what I, you know, what I believe in power, what I, my feelings about sex and sexuality, my feelings about love, all of those things are things that you would traditionally associate with men instead of women in our culture. And again, some of these associations are kind of bullshit, but that's how it is. But one of the funny things was when we, when Jacob finally came out to his mother, she was like, no, I don't buy it. You know, I don't think you're a man. And, you know, obviously they had a lot of talking and processing, and she sent him this test. It was a very, very long scientific test of some sort, and it was supposed to determine whether he had a male brain or a female brain. And so he was in the middle of taking this test, and he would go over the questions, and we would know exactly which ones were supposed to be male and which ones were supposed to be female. But very often, you know, I would be, you know, we would either have the same feelings about something, or I would have what I knew was going to be their male answer. And Jake would sometimes have what was going to be their female answer. And so, you know, he finished the test and sent it to his mom and never heard from her about it again. So I assume that he passed and it indeed has the male brain, because after that she started accepting that this was happening and she believed it and stuff. But yeah, so it's interesting because I think that by virtue of having a female partner, you know, I'm able to have those kind of non-traditional gender feelings, whether or not they're expressed in a way that people expect. But now that I have a male partner, it's much more difficult, and I get much more traditionally feminized by people around me. So I'm still, you know, sort of working out how other people's perceptions and the way they treat me influence my own gender expectations.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You talk a lot about feeling like your queer identity gets erased or feeling like your femme identity is not present once Jacob transitioned.
Some of the femme identity I kind of ditched a little bit. Like I started... you know, when Jacob was still in a female body presented female, I had long red nails all the time. It was a thing. Anytime somebody questioned, wow, how can you be a lesbian with long nails? I mean, I'd be flirty and I would say, I'll show you how I do it, you know? And, I do just fine in bed with them, you know, I'll show you. And then after Jake, you know, came out as a man, then I was suddenly a woman walking next to a man, and I didn't like the way that people were interpreting me then and, you know, just in the broader world. And so I started cutting my nails shorter. I started being a little butcher, basically, just to see if there was any kind of sort of queer coding that people could still pick up from me and without, like, completely losing who I was. But the answer was no, they couldn't pick it up from me.
Lower your expectations. Okay.
That's what I've done, yeah.
Okay, we're going to take another break. I don't want you to lower your expectations when it comes to lube people. And I want you to know that Astroglide has these two great products that are free of parabens, glycerin, all these like nasty chemicals. It's the Sensitive Skin Gel and Astroglide Natural. Go to sexglide.com to find out more about those and their other products and to get a free sample. Stay with us. Coming up, we are going to get to your questions, which you've been emailing us, and we are going to talk about family and parenting with Jacob and Diane Anderson Minchell. So stay with us. Looking to add something fun and different to your sexual experiences? Then try AstroGlide X, premium silicone personal lubricant. AstroGlide X contains a unique blend of high-quality silicones that provide a silky smooth experience unlike any other. AstroGlide X is also waterproof and perfect for water play. Not only does AstroGlide X last longer than all water-based products and is hypoallergenic and latex safe, it's even great for massage. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today I'm talking with the authors of the memoir Queerly Beloved, Jacob and Diane Anderson Minchell. Now, I realized that the two of you like a challenge when I got about halfway through the book and you started to decide you were going to become foster parents. And not just foster parents, but foster parents to children who had been in the criminal justice system, who had major issues and were in a really rigorous, structured program, which you as parents had to participate in and be trained specially for. And this is a part of your journey that's really sweet and also really frustrating and really heartbreaking at one point. Where do you stand now in terms of possibly wanting to adopt your own kids or doing the foster to adopt system? I mean, it seemed like those experiences kind of burnt you out.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is it broke my heart. Those experiences broke my heart. And with our last, with our last foster child, we tried so hard to remain part of his life after he was moved from our home to to an institutionalized facility. We remained with him. We went and, it was like a 5-hour drive and we would go visit him every weekend. And then, they just kept getting moved and moved. And at one point, his probation officer was very much questioning us in terms of he sort of like realized at that time, like who we were in terms of being a lesbian and a transgender man. And I think he was very suspect of that. And I think that he was then also projecting that and saying, well, nobody likes this kid, so I don't understand why you've bonded with him. Like, as though there was something wrong with us for bonding with this kid. And so, you know, basically they kind of just cut off our contact and just, you know, having at one point a vision, because I don't think his mom ever wanted him back, you know, so we kind of at one point had a vision of this child being in our lives forever. And we, you know, we're very clear whenever whenever you need us, we're here. And then having that kind of cut off, it was really this sort of thing where it just broke my heart at the time. And I really, you know, it was really like, I don't know that I can do this, you know, anymore. We need a break from this. And we knew it's very difficult, you know, with the program that we were doing, it was, you have to have the children have to be in sight or sound 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which means when they're not in the room with us, they have to be on, unless they're in their bedroom sleeping or in the bathroom, which is always private. They will, if they're in a different room, the kitchen or the front room, then we are there on camera and we can either hear them or we can watch them. And they're not allowed to even go out to the backyard without us watching them. And so it was very rigorous and very structured and very different because, again, we were working with boys with emotional problems and, you know, they had all been abused. Many of them had been abused, I should say. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I think that, you know, so what was happening at the same time, we're both having our careers and Jake really took sort of a sabbatical from his at that point and was doing the lion's share of day-to-day parenting because I was traveling. So every couple of weeks I'd fly to my office in San Francisco and then I would go to speaking engagements and I would go to other things. And I remember at one point on the telephone, because we would talk every night and we would go everything and, you know, very plaintive wail from Jake where he said, look, I didn't get into this to be a single parent. You know, I just don't know how much more I can do this. So at the point when our last child was removed from our home and moved to a different facility, we were like, we need to take a break here and, you know, and just try to figure out what's going to happen. And I think that since then, the short answer is we never know. You know, we'll have a day where I'll say, I'm totally done with that. We have moved closer to where my nieces, I have 7 nieces and 1 nephew. They're all under the age of 10 and we're much more involved in their lives now that we've moved closer. So some days we'll say, you know, we've got all these kids in our life. We need to give resources to, why would we bring more kids into our life? And then there are other days, you know, where we'll feel a little differently and we'll say, well, maybe, you know, in the future, maybe we'll adopt in the future. Maybe, you know, we'd still like to, we got originally into foster parenting. We wanted to work with trans kids, particularly and queer kids. And, we just kind of, you know, lucked into a different kind of program than we thought we would, just because of resources and availability. And so, you know, there are times where we're like, well, it's really our responsibility to take in another queer or trans kid, like, or it's really our responsibility to take in kids that are out there that don't have homes because we have, you know, so many resources compared to a lot of those kids. And I really believe in foster parenting. I mean, we both really believe in foster parenting. I really believe in it because my mom was part of the system and, you know, and I have a belief that if she were allowed to stay in her foster situation, she would have had just a dramatically different and better life. You know, her foster experience was good. So we believe in the system. It's just a matter of having very complex personal feelings about parenting at this point.
Jacob, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Diane's right. We kind of go back and forth on things. So, you know, talk about like, you know, some of the reasons I think that our marriage is the way it is. And sometimes I think it is stronger for not having children, actually. And so I'm probably mostly happy that we have kids in our life who get to go away and, you know, go back home again when, you know, when we're tired and when we are frustrated and when we're all those things. And I definitely wouldn't want, I think one of the hard things is that Diane is the family, but she's also the person who would most want to be at home with children. So working out how that actually works is a difficult thing. I don't want her to be at work while I'm at home having to take care of kids all day. She doesn't want to be at work while I'm having to take care of kids all day, and she doesn't get to. But again, we still, we definitely, feel like we've closed the door biologically for kids, but, we're still just in our 40s. And I think that there's a long period of time that we still have to, change how we have children in our lives.
Well, we only have time for one more question, and I want to get to a question from a listener. It will probably not surprise you to find out that all of my listeners have questions about sex. But it's so funny because, it's very clear, like there are very clear boundaries in the book of like what you'll talk about and what you won't. And Diane is much more of an exhibitionist in terms of talking about your sex life than right. Jacob. So I'm going to award a prize to Juan from Miami, but I'm going to substitute a question. Okay. So Juan from Miami, you're winning your Sport Cheats prize. Okay. But here's the question I want to know very, very briefly. If you could choose just one word to describe why you have had such a successful relationship that has withstood so many major changes, one of which was Jacob's transition, what word would each of you use?
That's a good question, and it may take more than 3 minutes.
I have one, and that's just resilience. Like, I think that without having, that's why I think those, earlier 16 years were so important. Without having gone through things that were really tough and being able to, get through them together as a couple, we built up the resilience that was, sort of necessary to withstand this kind of a trauma.
Yeah. And
you only have one word, Diane.
Right. Well, let's say lazy. Because at this point, we're 46 and neither one of us, we're both too lazy to split up all our shit. So, no, really, it's about, like, I think that we had an old couple very early on who told us, you should take each other for granted. And when we were young, we were both like, that is total bullshit. And but now I totally get it. A quarter century later, I totally get it. What they meant was, you don't take the person for granted, but what you take for granted is that you will always be there. You will always be married. You will always be together. So that there's never an option to say, maybe we should split up. Maybe we should divorce. Maybe this fight means you don't love me. Maybe you're cheating on me means that we have to split up. That you just don't allow those things. For other people, of course, those are deal breakers. But for us, they're not, basically. So for us, a lot of those things are things that, we're going to take for granted that we're in this marriage and we got to work through those kinds of things.
Well, anyone in a long-term relationship going through any kind of change should read this book because it's quite inspirational. And I thank you both for writing it and for being on my show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. And thanks for listening, folks.
Diane and Jacob Anderson Minchell are the authors of Queerly Beloved, A Love Story Across Genders, which is available now from Bold Stroke Books. You can find out more about them at anderson-minchell.com. You can find Diane on Twitter at @deliciousdiane. You can find Jacob at Jake0. Jake 2.0. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. You can get me on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of Sex Out Loud. And until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.